What's good, Atlanta? This is the Blogging Dirty Podcast, where Dirty Bird is the word. If you haven't heard, I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer for Fanside. Appreciate you guys hanging in there with me today. A little bit of technical difficulties to get this thing off the ground, but that's life, and this is the world that we live in. But before we begin, be sure to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Do whatever you can to help make this show grow, because we love talking Falcons football here, and I love hanging out with you. So, you know, let's get rolling here today, you know, with some vibe check. You know, how are we feeling after the Sunday night loss to the 49ers by 10 points to fall to 3-3? I'll be straight with y'all. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I mean, probably the best way for me to describe it here is, like, you got that Buffalo win, you beat Minnesota, you beat Washington, you had a very tough first six games of the season, you know, having a big, huge momentum shifting win at home versus Buffalo on a short week on the road across the country. These things happen. And to be 3-3 at this point, you know, with, I think, everybody in the division outside of Carolina losing, again, Carolina's ahead of us. We're in third place now. They're 4-3. Maybe they're not that bad of a team, as everybody said. So maybe that 30-0 loss there up in Charlotte is not the end of the world. But for the most part, I'll say, like, there are things about this game versus the 49ers that were incredibly frustrating, and I'll unpack them here shortly. But I think really the single biggest thing that's leading me to feel good was, like, that kind of felt like almost a scheduled loss, and there was a chance that the Falcons could have conceivably won. The good news is, for the most part, right now, like, you're 3-3. You still have plenty of opportunities, plenty of wins to be had on your schedule. I think, like, you got to take care of the middle part of it here. I think it was Mike Conte there for 99 of the Game says you probably got to win 7 of your final 11 games, which I would probably agree. I mean, you got to finish the season, 10-7 to have any realistic shot at making the playoffs. You have two with the Saints. You got a home game versus the Panthers. The Dolphins aren't any good. The Jets are struggling. But then you got to play tougher teams. Cardinals are kind of reeling a little bit. You got to play teams like, you know, Tampa again. You got to play the Rams, who look really good. They're 5-2 as well. You got to look at Seattle's not going away. And then obviously the biggest surprise of the season, you got to play the Colts in Germany. So you got to find a way to make sure that these good things can happen here. So again, I don't think the vibes of this game are, you know, the worst that they possibly could be. I wish they were better. But, you know, I think the good part is, like, we've been, like, pure elation and then pure dread with the Falcons. We've kind of found some area in between. So, you know, again, this team, if you want to grow, you got to be slow and steady and kind of feel low-key good. And, yes, that loss wasn't great, and I'll unpack some of the things about that game that frustrate me, but also looking ahead to, you know, why I'm so optimistic about this team. So not the worst loss in the world, but I'd be over the moon if we were 4-2. But we're not. We're 3-3, and this is the Blogging Dirty Podcast. All right, second topic here. First guy who's going to get ripped on here is Andy. Here's to you, Mr. Robinson. Zach Robinson is not leveling up as a play caller. Again, like, what is going to cost this team a playoff spot in the end is the coaching staff. Yes, there may be some players who are young and experienced. Injuries happen. I mean, that happens to everybody. But the one thing that you can control that the Falcons didn't seem to control is the coaching staff. There are instances where I feel that Raheem Morris is just an overqualified coordinator occupying a head coaching seat. And while Jeff Ulbrich has been sensational as the defensive coordinator, I'll talk about him here in a second. Zach Robinson has been very hit or miss as the OC. There are games where he looks fantastic. There are games where it doesn't come together. And where I think the fourth down play is, like, okay, that kind of flipped the game, where, like, I think the 49ers went on to score, you know, to make it 20-10, as opposed to the Falcons potentially adding some points, you know, from it being down 13-10 late. There's got to be something that Robinson needs to do to help Michael Penix Jr. Elevate as a young quarterback. Look, Penix is incredibly accurate and more than willing to throw the ball outside the numbers along the sidelines. He's really great at that. But honestly, outside of throwing the ball to Drake London in the middle, he's not comfortable throwing in the middle of the defense. And that was illustrated by how the Falcons looked offensively versus the 49ers. I think there were plays out there where, like, if we had a more confident quarterback and a little bit more of a well-rounded offensive scheme or play design, what have you, we could really move the sticks here. There were other stuff where it's like, okay, Penix had a couple of brain farts here. Again, he plays totally different at home or in a dome than he does outside. I don't really know what that is. Probably the second worst game of the season behind the Carolina disaster. So thus far, he's had, two or three really good games. I thought he played very well versus Tampa. He played sensational versus the Bills and looked really good versus the Commanders. The Vikings game, he did enough to win. So I would say this is the second worst game he's played of six thus far. But I understand that when you have a player like Bijan Robinson, you're going to want to give him the football and you're going to want to like try to get him featured on just about as many plays as possible. And again, this is what happens when you have a wide receiver or a running back of this talent. This is what the Lions did with Barry Sanders. This is what the Rams could do with Marshall Faulk. This is what the Chargers have done with LaDainian Tomlinson. Yes, they had Antonio Gates there as well. But these are the sort of things that, you know, when you have a player of Robinson's magnitude, you want to get him the ball as often as possible. But, you know, really good defenses are particularly well-coached defenses like the 49ers. They'll look at that, they'll make adjustments, and you'll neutralize Bijan Robinson a little bit more. So you got to find your, you know, what happens when your initial play doesn't work? What do you do when you can't throw your fastball or your breaking stuff doesn't work? You got to get somebody out with your third pitch and maybe you just don't have it that day. You got to find ways to win. You have to find ways within your playbook, within your play calling scheme, within your design to still move the sticks anyway. And again, I think this offense is simply too talented to only score 10 points on the road at San Francisco versus a team whose defense was, very much depleted. You know, Fred Warner's out for the year. Joey Bosa is out for the year. And again, the 49ers are kind of banged up here. That's kind of their nature. That's kind of what they are. But you had a bunch of no-name guys on defense handling you. Credit to Robert Saleh for eating the staff's lunch. And again, maybe the familiarity and the continuity with these staffs, again, this is all stemming from the McVay Shanahan tree. Obviously, Saleh was the head coach of the Jets last year. Ulbrich was his defensive coordinator. And then, you know, obviously, Robinson came over with Raheem Morris from the LA Rams from McVay. And McVay and Shanahan were both on Mike Shanahan's staff there in the 2013 Washington team. So it all stems from this. But then again, there's so many different coaches that stem from that staff in the NFL today. So, like, you got to be a little more creative. You can't 11 personnel people to death. Again, I have appreciated some sort of instances where you put Algier in the backfield and you flex Robinson out. So you're creating a little bit of a different personnel look. I think that's a positive sign for this team. But part of me wonders, like, with Robinson, like, what's the end game here for him? I mean, he was well thought enough in L.A. to come to Atlanta to be the OC. He has had his moments here the last 2 years. But it's also been incredibly frustrating. Like, he's not really been as good of an offensive play caller as some of the really great ones we've had over the years. You know, obviously not what Kyle Shanahan was in 16. There were moments there with Dirk Cutter the first time around where he was sensational. Sark had his moments. And obviously Dave Ragone didn't do a damn thing last year because it was all – last couple of years because it was all Arthur Smith. But, I mean, you're not even Mike Mularkey-level stuff at this point. Again, like the team comes and goes with how well the offense plays because the defense consistently shows up. But for the most part, it's you got to be a little bit more steady here. And I think this comes back to coaching, inconsistencies, coaching. You're not leveling up. You know, when you're in these roles, you got to take advantage. You can't just be just happy to be here. This is a team that hasn't made the playoffs in almost a decade. We got to figure this out. We're in third place. You got to win these games. And again, you've shown that you can beat the best teams. Like you beat Buffalo, but then granted your losses are to like playoff caliber teams with, the 49ers, the Buccaneers, and I guess the Vikings, although I think the Vikings are incredibly fraudulent. You haven't played an easy schedule by any means because the Panthers, they're better. They're getting better with each week. Dave Canales is a fantastic coach. Obviously the Commanders were an NFC championship team a year ago. And then, the Bills, same thing in the AFC. So you haven't really played an easy schedule. So maybe the level of competition drops down, but you can't be so passive in these situations. You need to have your coaching staff be a reason that you win, not something that you have to overcome. You know, I look at my alma mater of Georgia. Georgia doesn't have the most talent out there. I think the transfer portal has really hurt their depth in key positions, particularly in the pass rush, defensive backfield, and along the offensive line. They've got a fantastic quarterback there in Gunnar Stockton, who kind of is the straw that stirs the drink. The coordinators there in Athens with Mike Bobo and Glenn Schumann often let Dog Nation down. Schumann every week, Bobo often enough. But Kirby Smart is like, look, we're just not going to lose this game. Right now, Georgia's 6-1, number 5 in the country. Their only loss is to perpetual nemesis, Alabama, at home by 3. And you could have won that game if Bobo didn't, like, eat his shorts and decided, let's give the ball to Cash Jones. Why are we doing that? Like, we got to, like, there's opportunities abound to learn. And you have to want to learn. And that's not to say that Robinson doesn't want to learn. I just wonder how much longer he's going to be here. Is the team going to fire him? Is he going to get hired by Oklahoma State to take over for his mentor, Mike Gundy, in Stillwater? I think he's the top candidate there. Personally, I think Oklahoma State, it owes it to itself to kind of get out of the Gundy footprint a little bit. But, I mean, outside of Wisconsin and maybe Boston College, that's the worst team in the Power Four. And I think Robinson knows what it takes to win and be successful there in Stillwater. But, like, you know, do you really want to leave being a coordinator of the NFL with an opportunity to be an NFL head coach to go be the head coach at your alma mater? Like, this is what you do when you get fired. Like, if Matt Rhule leaves Nebraska and Zach Taylor gets fired, do you think he goes back to Nebraska? I think that's within the realm of possibility. You know, is Arthur Smith a candidate to go take over at North Carolina? I think he's better than Bill Belichick. I think he'd do a better job than Bill Belichick there for the Tar Heels, because they're coming up dead every week. So, again, the game of football goes back and forth more so between, like, college and pro. But I kind of feel with Robinson, he's not all in here. And I think this hurts the team. And again, like, just because, look, that's an opportunity of a lifetime to potentially lead your alma mater. A lot of people do that there in college football. Jim Harbaugh did it. Kirby Smart does it. Shane Beamer might go back to Virginia Tech. That could be interesting, because it's not going very well in South Carolina. I mean, they had a protest from Mike Shula. Man, that guy just ruins dreams. He ruined him in Alabama. He's ruined him in Carolina. He's ruining him now there in South Carolina. The man just won't go away.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans: a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Zach Robinson just is the point of my frustration here, as you can clearly tell. So I'll move on to the other, a guy that did not get the benefit of the doubt from Robinson and was hurt because of him. Let's move on to some big Penix energy with a third topic here. Michael Penix Jr., he's got to get better in some key areas. Look, there's people out there in the national narrative saying, like, oh, Kirk Cousins would be better than this. There are things that Penix can do. Like, he can really spin the football. He's got really great leadership traits. He gets, I don't know, Kyle Pitts involved in the passing game. That was a pleasant surprise. Still hasn't been able to quite figure it out with Darnell Mooney outside of that one big play. Drake London kind of largely disappeared versus the 49ers. Again, he's got a good rapport with the guys in the offense, but there's three things that I think he needs to get better at, like, very soon. If the Falcons want to make the playoffs, again, he's only had 9 career starts at this point, a bulk of them at prime time. I think he's, 4-5 in those starts. Like, he's still trying to figure this out. The three areas he needs to get better at are he's got to feel confident enough throwing the ball down the middle of the field between the hash marks. Matt Ryan and Kirk Cousins made millions of dollars during that with pinpoint accuracy. That's number two. Penix has to get a little bit more accurate. And then three, I think he has to, I wouldn't say feel the pressure, but I think just have a little bit more spatial awareness about where he is in the backfield. There have been a few intentional groundings. There have been a few times where he's turned the ball over, you know, by dumping it. And again, he's not a fumble machine, but like, you know, when it rains, it pours with him, and he kind of like quicksand becomes a reality here. And I think really the big key that he's got to do is he's got to find some trust and faith in the middle of the field. And I'll mention this. I think the middle of the field was where the Falcons lost the game versus the 49ers more so than anything in both sides. And I'll start on defense real quick just to get this out of my head while I'm thinking about it. And again, this comes down to the two injuries of note. Devon Diablo, he fractured his forearm, so he's going to be week to week now. Penix hurt his ankle. He's kind of more day-to-day. I would venture to guess Penix will start and play versus the Commander or versus the Dolphins. If he can't, be thankful you've got Kirk Cousins. Diablo, he'll probably be back later, but like once he got removed from the game and they had to insert J.D. Bertrand with his guardian cap, I knew we were toast. And as much as J.D. Bertrand tries really hard, from Roswell, played at Blessed Trinity, played at Notre Dame, he's a special teams guy. He's not a starter. And it goes to show how much the Falcons valued Devon Diablo coming over in free agency from the Raiders. Like, he and Cade Nellis, like, seem to work, you know, very well on tandem, really bringing out a great part of the linebacking core. And it's allowing other guys in the defensive front seven to really take off. Obviously, it's kind of more of like, you know, a bunch of other guys making it happen. Obviously, Jalen Walker didn't play versus the 49ers. James Pierce Jr. making some really smart, savvy plays. Zach Harrison's becoming a fantastic player before us. David Onyemata's starting to look good. Rook's making plays. Dorless, again, maybe he's been quiet the last couple weeks, but we've seen what he can do. Just once Diablo went out, it basically became such a tremendous mismatch with Christian McCaffrey basically running the ball at J.D. Bertrand, and we couldn't really stop. And then, like, you know, that's football. That's what happens. These guys are the best at what they do in the business, and they'll take advantage of every mismatch. This is what they do in the NBA. This is why they switch. They'll put the best option and put him on defensively, you know, the best, you know, the worst defender and try to get points. It's why you can't have a liability out there because they'll exploit you. It's the same thing with an offensive line. You know, if you've got a weak link there amongst your front five, they're going to go after it every time. So that's how part of it is too. I think the other thing here, and again, we'll find out maybe more later as time goes along, but obviously, Ray McCloud was released earlier this week. He played very well for the team last year as number three receiver behind London and Mooney. He kind of saw his role diminished in this offense. I think it's kind of with the emergence of Casey Washington. Obviously, seeing Davis Sills get a lot more snaps out there than McCloud. McCloud, I don't think, make the trip to San Francisco. And it seemed as though, I think, with his diminishing snaps, I think he kind of got into it a little bit with Raheem Morris, where he can kind of, he had an excused absence, apparently, for not being with the team on Sunday night. But they quickly released him, and I think it wasn't – trying to think exactly what it is. It wasn't, like, injury or anything like that. It had nothing to do with Ike Hilliard apparently being let go as the wide receivers coach after the Carolina disaster. But apparently it's like Raheem Morris says, this is between me, Ray Ray, and the organization, so maybe – you know, it kind of came to blows, and it's like, you know what, you can get out of town. And at that point, maybe the Falcons go and look to try to locate a wide receiver. Maybe after this week, maybe you try to get a, I don't know, that'd be awesome if you get Jalen Waddle. He looks so good in this offense there from the Dolphins. And again, organizations tank, players and coaches don't. If I'm Waddle, I want to get the hell out of Miami because two is a disaster. McDaniel's lost the locker room. Chris Greer doesn't know what he's doing. And Steven Ross is just a terrible owner. The Dolphins, we cannot lose to them, but we're the Falcons, so we might. We'll talk about that here in a little bit here. But I guess when it goes back to Penix, he's got to get better throwing the ball between the hash marks in the middle of the field. Again, getting a better weapon to do that will help. Seems like Pitts is getting most of his stuff, you know, outside the numbers too. We got to get more more open passing lanes there. Penix has to do a better job of, you know, being a little bit more aware in crucial spots, you know, throwing the ball out of bounds for the intentional grounding. You know, you had the 10-second runoff prevented a potential chip shot for John Parker Remo to potentially tie the game up there towards the half. You got to be smarter about that. And then, like, I think the other thing he's just got to do a better job of is just be more accurate in general. I think the mechanics of him, like, from the waist down with the feet are pretty good. I'm not going to dock him too bad for the inner part of the game. I think he got hurt there in the final two drives, took a shot, and obviously he really wasn't able to do much with, like, his one of his feet. It's either his, I don't know which one it was, left or right ankle. But, like, when you've got a foot issue, your job is to throw. You can't really plant. You can't really drive. That may impact your accuracy as well. But I think he just throws it so hard sometimes where, like, a little bit more touch could work. But again, I think mechanically he's pretty sound above the hips and everything like that. This just comes with more reps and timing and everything like that. He's not doing things out there that are, like, so incredibly dumb. He's not driving me crazy. I think that, like, this is, again, a kind of more of a growing process for him. I just kind of wonder, though, you know, with Robinson as his OC, if he's going to plateau a little bit. And that kind of scares me in some capacities. So Penix has to be better. Robinson's got to be a hell of a lot better. But you know what doesn't have to be better? Our defense does not have to be better. Let's move on to some grits blitz. Win or lose, Jeff Ulbrich's defense continues to show up. This is a guy that I think his time in New York did him a world of good in terms of his coaching future. This is a guy that, you know, was like the linebackers coach, kind of behind Morris, behind Quinn here in Atlanta for a while. Again, I think he coached at UCLA a little bit, tried to recruit Roquan Smith to Westwood, but ultimately I think Roquan went to Georgia and the rest is history. But with Ulbrich, I'm seeing him be very creative defensively. I'm seeing him be unencumbered on the sidelines. I see him really leveling up as a coach. And I think his time being the head coach of the Jets, and they didn't win a lot of games last year, haven't won a game since he left, to be honest with you. But just viewing the game from a different prism and a different role has served him in ways that will make him better. And in turn, for as long as he's here, will make the Falcons better defensively. Because I think more so, it takes pressure off of Raheem Morris in ways to fix the defense. Raheem Morris, that's his side of the ball. He's also coached up. He's more of a defensive back. He coached receivers here in Atlanta before, so he's got a little bit of offensive knowledge. He's kind of more of a CEO type now. So he'll try to figure out the offense a little bit. But, like, having a guy that you can trust, one of your best friends in Ulbrich, figuring out the defense, you know, this is, you know, the squeaky wheel gets oil, if you will. And this is making the team better. This is keeping the Falcons in games that they probably shouldn't be. And I know they lost 33-0 versus the Panthers, but that was some self-inflicted nonsense there. Again, the defense has been good every week. I would say, you know, the pass rush continues to be there. The tackling comes and goes. I think the secondary is, for the most part, pretty good. They were able to survive the A.J. Terrell hamstring injury at the Vikings. But, you know, the Divine Diablo forearm injury, that's going to present some challenges for this team as well. They've got a nice rotation of edge rushers here that they deploy. And I think with some of this, it's creative. Atlanta has a pass rush now. This is no longer something that, like, you know, keeps me up at night thinking about this team. We're like, what are we even doing, bro? Not at all. Not even one little bit. But I feel like when I'm watching Ulbrich there on the sidelines, you know, it's like when you have a former head coach as a coordinator, that elevates your staff because you've got a more effective communicator in some ways, because their job requires being able to communicate to the entire team, not just their side of the ball, their position group. There's also things from being in that big chair that you can apply to help your coach out. And I'm always in favor of hiring retreads to be your coordinators. And I'll touch on that here momentarily here, potentially in a second. But this is the offense has to level up and rise to the level of the defense. And I don't think the defense is going to stop playing hard, because I think this unit is having a lot of fun doing it. obviously when you're going up against Christian McCaffrey, that's gonna make things challenging for you as a run defense. Mac Jones is proving to be a pretty good quarterback. I think the 49ers have a conundrum on their hands there with, you know, the Brock Purdy contract of it all, the guy they probably should have drafted three, and Mac Jones back out of Alabama in 2021. But that's neither here nor there. John Lynch gets to continue to operate without consequence and just waste first round picks left and right, man. I saw something with, you know, the NBA started last night. The Atlanta Hawks play their first game of the season tonight versus the Toronto Raptors. I saw somewhere that, like, their 22 and 23 first-round picks are no longer in the league. But that's a different regime. Whatever, Rasache is good. And we'll see what Newell does here. Going up from Georgia to the Hawks, you know, again, like another Georgia professional guy like Jalen Walker. So I'm really excited to see what Atlanta can do this year. Cleveland looks really good there in the East. Maybe Atlanta can get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know. Hawks might be pretty good. You also got Kristaps Porzingis. Dyson Daniels got a good contract here. Trae Young. Very excited about the Hawks. So we'll talk about them and see how that kind of helps us out here. Braves, we got to hire a new manager. Still don't know who it's going to be. Watch it be Don Mattingly. I did love Don Mattingly growing up, but you know. It is what it is. Anywho, when I look at Ulbrich's defense, I feel that the Falcons always have an opportunity to beat any game that they play because of him. And that wasn't always the case. For as much, you know, I deal with this, like, you know, the Saturday and Sunday at all, Georgia and Falcons. Like Saturday, you know, I'm like, Bobo will occasionally mess up, but he'll figure it out sometimes. Schumann always messes it up. And, you know, with the Falcons, it's like, the defense is always going to be under Ulbrich, and it's hit or miss here with Robinson. And obviously Kirby Smart's a better head coach than Raheem Morris, but Raheem Morris seems to have a good feel for what the Falcons are after having been here previously. But again, Ulbrich's keeping this team in and around the playoff mix. Got to win some of these games. Really got to take advantage of this middle third of the season. So let's move on to our penultimate topic of the day with some blow the whistle. We got the Dolphins coming up this week, so I'm very excited about that. Should Mike McDaniel be next year's offensive coordinator? Blow the whistle so incredibly hard. Yes. I haven't been more fired up about this idea of any we've done here with blow the whistle in recent weeks. Look, we got the Dolphins coming up. They've got one win. It's over the Jetty Jets. We still got to play both of those teams. And I think in terms of vibe check, when we go across the 32 teams in the NFL, are there worse vibes right now in the league than what's going on there in Miami Gardens, Florida? Pretty bad there in Nashville. Not super great there in Florham Park there with the Jets. Beyond that, I'm trying to think. It's starting to get kind of weird there in Glendale. With the Cardinals too, maybe a few Raiders. It's really weird. Yeah, that's not going. The Pete Carroll hire was a disaster. Geno Smith is just cooked. But I would say the Dolphins, the vibes are awful. You know, the Good Samaritan that is not Tyreek Hill. Yeah, breaking his leg, may not ever play again. That was really ghastly. Tua is just a train wreck. Tua's he cost my beloved alma mater a national championship in 17 with a second and 26, finding a Devontae Smith in overtime there in the bins. This guy is just, I mean, outside of Deshaun Watson, this is the worst contract in the NFL. He's terrible. I saw this on the sidelines. They put Quinn Ewers in there. He did a three and out, and Mike McDaniel didn't even acknowledge him. Mike McDaniel knows this is over. And it was kind of weird when he got hired. This is kind of like the brainy, run-heavy, thinking ahead of the kind of bro offensive coordinator there for the 49ers under Shanahan. Again, he had been in Atlanta before on Dan Quinn's staff back in 15-16. Also, I think he was a ball boy growing up in Denver for the Broncos, played at Yale. The Dolphins will do it to you. The Dolphins will chew you up and eat you at – I mean, look at Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell was the interim head coach. They never thought he was a buffoon in the rain, how he's one of the most well-respected head coaches in the NFL because he's just the ultimate CEO type. big machismo guy, but has very good emotional intelligence. Empowers great people. I think with McDaniel, when he was with the 49ers, there was a situation where it's like, how many other teams were going to really hire him to be a head coach? And the Dolphins were one. Dolphins are desperate. Dolphins are like, Brian Flores is a disaster here. Brian Flores might get an opportunity to be a head coach again here soon because he's really propping up the Vikings while they're listless offensively, whether that's with Carson Wentz or with J.J. McCarthy, or the idea of J.J. McCarthy. Kevin O'Connell's just like, why'd you put me in this hellhole, Quezzy? And Quezzy's like, okay. Anyway, what I would like McDaniel to be here is because I'm operating on the premise and the idea that I think Zach Robinson's going to take over to Oklahoma State. I mean, who else? Like, wait, let me put it this way. I'll take a sip of coffee here before I unpack this point. This is probably the one thing I want to talk about today more than anything. And I put this as the penultimate topic before we get to, you know, our final one where we talk about the Dolphins game. When you've got a, I don't know if traditional power, but like a really good, really high-end NFL or college football program that's really pulled back of late, one where it's like this is – it's really bad for the first time in a very long time, it kind of makes you wonder, like, what went wrong? And I think when you have programs that can be a tad insular, like Oklahoma State and Wisconsin, again, that's the other program I cover for a living predominantly besides Georgia, Wisconsin Badgers now. Like, Gundy was historic. Gundy was iconic there in Stillwater. He played quarterback there in the 80s. A fantastic passer. He also got the handball and the ball off to Thurman Thomas and Barry Sanders. Yeah, that season of Barry Sanders football in 88. Alongside Joe Burrow in 2019 at LSU and Cam Newton in 2010 at Auburn, like the best single-handed single season in college football history. They all won the Heisman. Anyway, like when you have, for lack of a better word, like a college program that's been good for a while, that's pulled back, not everybody's going to want to have that. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to replace the legend, you want to replace the guy replaced legend. But I was doing some, like, hot seat watch or you know, potential replacements for Luke Fickell in Wisconsin. I'm like, do they really want to hire one of their own? I mean, they kicked Jim Leonard to the curb. They didn't give him the job. They kicked Paul Chryst to the curb. You know, do you think Jim Leonard wants to leave the Broncos to come back? Maybe. I mean, when you got alma mater ties, maybe Jason Eck leaves New Mexico to take over at Wisconsin. Maybe, like, you know, Robinson's like, okay, alma mater's calling. I got to go back to Oklahoma State. And if that's the case, you know, I don't think there's a lot of people in Atlanta, Georgia, Flowery Branch, they're going to be sad to see Zach Robinson go. So if he does go or if he's let go, and I think Mike McDaniel is going to be one of the next head coaches in the NFL fired. It might happen after the Falcons game, potentially. I mean, Brian Callahan's already out. So in Nashville, so we talk about 8 different head coaches potentially being on the hot seat this year. I would say McDaniel's okay. We got Callahan out. I would say McDaniel's right up there as well. Brian Daboll, it's hit or miss here with the Giants. You know, Aaron Glenn won a game, dude. Jonathan Gannett started to turn on him a little bit there in Phoenix. Honestly, the Falcons got to make the playoffs where he might be out potentially. But I think that they'll give him a third year because they gave Arthur Smith a third year. This is better than what Arthur Smith was. But if McDaniel's like certainly in that cluster of like the next 5 head coaches fired, I would say he's probably in the hottest seat in the NFL right now. If he's out, he may come back here. He's got good memories of being in Atlanta, being on Dan Quinn's staff. Again, he was kind of more of like a running backs coach, quality control guy a little bit there early in his coaching career. He's, again, like, I don't know if he's necessarily served under Raheem, but he's been on the same staff with him at Ulbrich. I think that, like, what he could do, particularly as, you know, a play caller in an elevated one, I mean, we'll see even better stuff out of Bijan Robinson. Like, we'll see MVP Bijan Robinson. I think that would basically lean, like, you know, we'll keep Tyler Allgeier as well, because I think he really loves to run the football. Keep Pitts, too. Mooney, like, you'll continue to build on this offense. I wonder how the offensive line is going to look, but like, Dwayne Ledford seems to be really solid in his group there. I just kind of think that, like, everything that we wanted and hoped Zach Robinson would be as an OC, like, you could conceivably get that with Mike McDaniel. And again, you've got another former head coach coming into a position as an overqualified coordinator. Like when you have a coach like that, and that really helps your team. I mean, look at the Vikings. Brian Flores is overqualified to be doing what he's doing with the Vikings defense. Arthur Smith's figuring it out a little bit more as the OC there in Pittsburgh. Helps having Aaron Rodgers, but I mean, he has options too. He can stay there. He could potentially take over at Tennessee. I mean, he could even go back to alma mater at North Carolina. Again, having options is good. McDaniel, I don't think, is going to be a head coach next cycle anyway. So, like, who's going to hire him? Like, the Jets are going to hire him? Are you kidding me? No. I think you look at somebody from the McVay-Shanahan tree, that would make a lot of sense. And, I mean, okay, do you go back to San Francisco? Potentially. Do you go to L.A.? Potentially. I think there's a fit there in Atlanta, and I think that, like, he's also got ties here. He knows the area. He knows what winning here looks like. If and when Robinson does leave, I think McDaniel's the first guy you call. Like, I don't even know who else you'd even do at this point. Like, let me put it this way. You only fire Zach Robinson if you know you get Mike McDaniel. If Robinson leaves on his own accord for Oklahoma State, you hope McDaniel's on a short list of guys to get here. So, again, maybe Ricky Morris does have a good eye for coaching talent. I mean, Jimmy Lake was a good defensive coordinator for Washington, terrible head coach after Chris Peterson left. Robinson has promise, and clearly that's still there, but it's so inconsistent, hit or miss. We can't overlook that. So, yes, blow the whistle. If Mike McDaniel becomes available and we got to make an offensive coordinator change, bring him here to Atlanta, please. And on that note, let's move on to our final topic here with I Saw the Line. Looking at this just now, let's make a pick against the spread for the Dolphins at home here in Week 8. It's a 1 o'clock kick. It's on CBS. Atlanta is favored by 7.5. The total is 44.5. The associated money lines are Atlanta minus 425, the Dolphins plus 320. ESPN's matchup predictor is giving the Falcons a 62% chance to win this game, where the Dolphins have a 37.6% chance to win this game. Atlanta is 3-3. Miami is 1-6. So I'm going to try to do the math as best as I can here. I'm going to take Atlanta to win, but I'm going to pick the Dolphins to cover. I think if it was 6.5, I might lean the Falcons to win and cover, but 7.5, I think that the final score is going to be decided by a touchdown. I'm going to go with the under here a little bit. I think the final score of this game is going to be 24-17. I'm going to see if I can do the math right here. 24-17, 24 plus 17, 41 points. So yeah, just that's kind of what I'm thinking it's going to be. What I'm getting at is I think there's a chance that the Falcons may slightly overlook the Dolphins. Like, oh, they suck. We're really good. But also the Falcons kind of got embarrassed in primetime. Not embarrassed, but like they lost. And let's be real. Everybody handles failure the exact same way, especially the Falcons. So when you fail, you know, you put in a little bit of extra work. You know, you pick yourself up by your bootstraps. You try to be a little more locked in than you were the week before. This game's at home. It's an early kick. The crowd noise could be in your favor. There are Dolphins fans out there, and that may be a lot of guys, people here wearing Dan Marino jerseys at this game. That man made a lot of fans for no reason. But anyway, I think there's a chance the Falcons might overlook the Dolphins. I think we're looking kind of how the game was when they played the Panthers a couple weeks ago, where like neither team we thought was really good. It was closer than it probably needed to for longer, but it kind of had a way of working out in some capacities. There may be a play or so where the Falcons kind of effectively give the Dolphins a touchdown. But I think at the end of the day, the Dolphins defense is going to have a very hard time defending Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier. More importantly, I think this is an opportunity for Penix to really rebound. I think that we get either between Drake London, Kyle Pitts, or Darnell Mooney, one of them is going to take off and it's going to work. And let's be real, even if Cousins plays, maybe that opens up the line a little bit there too. But I think there's opportunities to be had for Atlanta to get in the end zone three times in a Parker Irma field goal. Whereas I think the Falcons basically give the Dolphins one touchdown. They score one of their own and they kick a field goal. it'll be highly contested late. Maybe it'll kind of be like a backdoor cover there for the fans, which, you know, I'm not ruling out. Like, maybe you're looking at, like, you know, it's 24-14 for a while. The Dolphins do like two possessions. They get in there. The Falcons kind of do some prevent defense to kick a field goal. They try it onside. They don't get it. I think of it exactly kind of how it would happen with the Commanders. That's how I'm seeing it here. Atlanta improves to 4-3. The Dolphins fall to 1-7, and that might be Mike McDaniel's final game. So that's what I'm leaning right here. Emo Hedge, got to do this. I'm going to keep doing this every time, because Emo Hedge is the way to go. And this was episode 64 here of the Blog and Dirty Podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter or the X at Bueller118. You can follow along with the show on YouTube at Blog and Dirty FS. You can follow along on X at Blog and Dirty. Be sure to watch, like, comment, subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, anywhere there's podcasts. Again, like I said at the top of the show, give us a 5-star review on any of those platforms. Really helps the show grow. You know, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, do whatever you can. Get the show out here to as many people as possible. This has kind of been more of me like doing everything behind the scenes, like now, really trying to figure out everything here with the show. Outside of making the title card, I'm basically running everything at this point. So gonna really man up handling the social media account here with this too on I guess on YouTube a little bit more. Over caffeinated, working 6 days in a row because college football does never sleep. Again, we're hanging in there. The vibes aren't too bad. Which you'd be happy if you're 3-3. Like if you would have split those games, you lost to the Bills, you beat the 49ers, like you'd be feeling about the same way too. So let's just kind of pump the brakes here a little bit. Got to start winning division games. And more importantly, got to take care of the games you got to win, such as the one coming up here on Sunday at home versus the Dolphins. Once again, thanks for listening. And this is the Blog and Dirty Podcast.